Welcome to the Grappling Grappling Rewind Podcast.
Welcome to This Week on the Grappling Rewind Podcast. In this week's show, we're going to recap the really best of 2021 for grappling, talk about some of the biggest upsets, some of the best matches, some of the best breakout performances, some wow moments of the year. This is our end of the year show, and as always in the show, I'm your host, Maine, to my co-host,
Miranda.
How you doing, Miranda?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing good. We are doing it remote because everything in Maryland is a little weird right now. We're both not feeling so great, so we decided to do it remote, which, again, we will make the audio the best that we can. If there's any hiccups, that's why. Hopefully, we'll back in person as soon as we can, but, you know, plan it safe, being responsible. So we also actually have, on this week, have a preview of Fury's 3, their third event, which has some really interesting matchups on it. We'll talk about that towards the end of the show, but moving into the best of the year. I don't really have any news, Miranda. Do you have any news this week?
I don't think so.
I don't think there's any news this week. No news this week. It's been a holidays here in the United States. We had Christmas and some other stuff. My brothers are in town, so it's been good to see them. One of them's upstairs playing Super Mario while we record the podcast, so that's good. Where do you want to start with end of the year? We actually have a rules section, too, because I added it this year of like, hey, we had a bunch of matches that just had weird things happen in the rules and weird changes happen because of the rules, so we included those as well.
I think it's a funny segment.
So where do you want to start this year? What do you want to start with?
I don't know. I guess we just start matches.
You start with best matches of the year?
We could either do that or we can do the cards that we felt like were important of the year.
Let's talk about some fun cards. I left some cards up here. Who's number one? Well, we had a couple events that started this year. Who's number one didn't start this year, but I think they really hit their stride with Who's Number One Championships. I'm trying to have two computers open here while we try to record this. Let me find the Who's Number One, the biggest Who's Number One. Who's Number One Championships. We had a bunch of matches happened on this card, and we had $30,000 per bracket, and there were five different brackets, five different grapplers made $30,000.
And this was the big 2 day madness, right?
It was 2 days of madness. Then they ran through all the divisions. All the divisions were absolutely stacked. There were some really great late replacements. We'll talk about those here a little later in the show. We had nine or 12 hour days in a row of grappling. They ran the loser's bracket, the consolation bracket, as a full bracket itself. So we actually got a legitimate, like, fought into third place. We even the third place winner had to win two matches. Overall, really interesting tournament, really interesting bracket. I would love for them to kind of condense it to one day, but overall, this sort of made and took place of ADCC 2021 that was supposed to happen this year. This ran in September of this year, a couple of months ago. It was great. I hope that they run this every year. It was outstanding. This leads to it's on this card, so one of our biggest upsets of the year, which was Tim Spriggs defeating Kanan Duarte with an inside heel hook. This was one that I don't think any of us saw coming. And even Spriggs getting to the finals was a pretty Cinderella story. And he talked about coming in as a hobbyist and that, you know, he was only training a couple of days a week leading into this. And then he heel hooks who we kind of think is consensus one of the best guys in the heavier weights, Kanan Duarte. This was just an absolutely crazy kind of ending turn of events for this tournament.
Yeah. And his first heel hook with Hassan Rita, wasn't that like the last couple seconds of the match?
I think it was really late in the match. It was like kind of a contentious match. They were like close. And then all of a sudden he just pulls out that sub kind of out of nowhere then moves on in what was going to be a very kind of a close decision there.
But it was the same heel hook that he used, I believe, in that match as he used at the end.
Yeah, it's a really great heel hook. He just steps over, threads his legs all the way through and just kind of grips and rips on the heel hook. It was a great moment. It was just an absolutely wild upset because I think leading into this, I was actually watching this at our gym and watching this live as basically like, yeah, probably kind of should take this. And I gave some reasons why. I was like, look, Spriggs can always take this with like a Hail Mary leg lock. And then like 2 minutes later, he does it. And I was like, well.
Yeah, we were watching it. It was like
Sunday night open mat. So it was great. Also on this card, we had Tyro Tolo defeating Michael Galvao via split decision in the 185-pound finals. We had Cade Rotolo defeating Gabriel Souza via kind of like a flying Darce choke for the 155-pound title. To see both brothers on the same card, both winning 30 grand and like really cementing themselves as top-level grapplers, that they can both independently make it to the finals of their own divisions and then walk away as the champion against very, very high-level opposition was wild and crazy to see. Again, to have another brother combo winning massive amounts of money in the same tournament was a really cool moment.
And what, this was also the one where Gabriel Souza took out Mikey,
yeah,
like literally first round.
Yeah, we had two big upsets on this, yeah, card, and that those were both of them. Actually, we had a couple. We had also in this tournament, we had Amanda Leve defeating, yeah, Gabby Garcia in the first round and almost kind of choking her. So I think the Who's Number One, as far as our upsets of the year go, had three of the biggest upsets of the year. In the first round, two with Pato defeating Mikey Musumeci via like a north-south choke.
It was Gabriel Souza.
Oh, sorry, Gabriel Souza, not Pato.
Pato defeated him in... Yeah. Pato was somewhere else. Well, Pato wasn't who defeated him. It was Gabriel Souza.
Gabriel Souza. Defeating with a north-south choke. Yeah. We had Levy and Gabby Garcia. And that was the first time that... wasn't the first time that Garcia had been beaten Nogi, but that was also, there was a big debate that happened because Levy was upset that Garcia didn't have to weigh in. And yeah, so Levy came in as a huge underdog into that and then was able to kind of, I mean, he was able to eventually get to Gabby Garcia's back and then lock in a super deep choke and take a very, very clear victory over Garcia. And Garcia would later go on later this year to retire actually in gi. After this Worlds was what?
Did she just retire in gi?
Yeah, she just retired after, because she got choked in both her division and the absolute a couple weeks ago at Worlds.
Yeah, she got slammed into her face.
Yeah.
She got like
a takedown.
Like a suicide choke or a suicide
takedown. Like a train, like, was kind of like a modified train wreck or outside, yeah, like a goshi, I think is the judo name for it. Yeah, so it was an interesting year, and that was sort of a big... Those were three giant upsets on the Who's Number One card. We also had Rafaela Geddes defeating Kendo Riesling via guillotine in the finals for the women, and Maisa Bastos taking a decision over Grace Gundrum that was pretty clear in the 115-pound women's final. So it was, again, overall, a really wild tournament. And I think, for me, one of the highlights of the year for a card, just because of the amount of money that it paid out to the grapplers, that always kind of factors pretty big with me. And just the quality of events, the upsets that we saw, and the basically who showed up. We also had a breakout performance by Jacob Couch on this card as well. He really showcased that, like, that peak and hang in there as well. I think did we have Cole Abate in this card, or is this a different Who's Number One?
We had Cole Abate in this card, and I know a lot of people kind of talk trash on the fact that he was a blue belt and they were adding him in because he was like a late replacement. And
yeah. Yeah,
and overall, he took out Gio Martinez.
Yeah. Yep. And then we'd later go on to win trials this year. We'll talk about trials as well. ADCC 21 trials a little bit later in this. But that's all I have for Who's Number One. Moving back on, do you want to move on to?
Sure.
Move on to the trials, actually.
Okay.
All of the trials finals weren't necessarily all fantastic matches. But what it took to win the trials this year, the first North American trials that happened back in November, was phenomenal. We had John Hansen defeating Damon Ramos in the finals of the men's absolute. We had Giancarlo Bordoni defeating Elder Cruz in the finals of the 88 kilogram. Cole Abate put on a really great performance over Keith Krikorian at the men's 66 finals. And this was, again, another, wasn't really a huge upset, but it was a big wow moment. In the previous match, Keith was down points versus Gianni Grippo. And
yeah,
got like a very, very, yeah, towards the end of the match, rear naked choke victory to move himself into the finals. And then Keith, again, third trials in a row, takes second place in the ADCC trials, which is just, you got to feel for the guy. But man,
yeah,
consistently getting to just the top level and then having someone being able to take it out in the finals. But go back and watch that finals match. It's a great finals match between Cole and Keith. We had Kendall Riesling and Amy Campo. Kendall took that again, winning her a second trials. We had Cade Rotolo defeating William Tackett in the finals. This was a wild match, and Tackett and Cody Steele also had a match in this tournament that was that wasn't the bonkers match. It was the Cody Steele and Plasado match.
Okay.
I realized didn't make it onto our list, but definitely should have made it onto our list. That was one of my top matches of the year. Also, being mat side for that was pretty special for me. So that was an absolutely wild match. And that whole tournament overall, just given how grueling it was and how long it was, plus we had Mason Fowler defeating Devontae Johnson to win another trials there as well. So overall, the ADCC North American Trials is a wild event. We have another one coming up in a couple months, right? Like four months?
They said it was in Vegas.
Yeah, that just got announced. Seth and Mo Jassim are working to actually get that fully moved to Vegas. It looks like it is now the first or second week in April. I think the first week in April.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think it's the first. Okay. Where I wrote it down when I was getting dinner earlier. It is now.
I'll have to see if I can make it out to that.
April 2nd and 3rd in Las Vegas.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
That's like beginning of April. Okay.
Yeah, April 2nd and 3rd, so that'll be good. So that's now the next trials that we're going to see. I think we're probably going to try to get out and go to that one. But the first trials this year was absolutely absurd and full of action. I'd have nothing else for trials. Again, go back and watch some of the finals for trials. That was the biggest trials we've had. Tons of matches, but definitely go back and watch Cole and Keith in their finals match.
And PJ Barch. PJ Barch's matches, almost all of them were amazing.
Yeah, Barch had an amazing run through trials as well. And again, we had a couple of matches that we were potentially going to add parts for, but Barch is a guy that I don't think we're going to get a chance to talk about any later in this show. Had a fantastic run through of matches. He beat Michael Lira Jr. with a great heel hook. He had a great run at one of the Emerald City Invitationals that he beat Alan Sanchez in the finals. He had just a stellar run this year and came super close to winning the trials, but just wasn't quite able to.
Yeah. But he's done amazingly lately. He's been on terror.
Yeah.
So we'll see him again, I'm sure. We'll probably see him. I mean, do you think we'll see him on West Coast Trials?
I think we see anyone that placed at trials that didn't win again. Would be my guess. I mean, I would be surprised to see anyone, unless they're injured, not attend the trials again. Let's see. I'm trying to get these in order as much as I can. Next one, let's talk about BJJ Stars 6. This one has definitely one of the weirder matches of the year, which is Lucas the Hulk Barbosa defeating Mateus Deniz on points.
Oh, yeah.
While being asleep.
That goes into our rule section. It's such a complicated thing.
Let's talk about that a little later, but that was on this card. Yeah. Go back. If you want to see one of the weirder finishes of the year, it's on BJJ Stars 6. Moving on to...
You can tell us what you think about it, because it's...
Yeah.
Everybody
we postulated about it for a while on the show when it happened, but it was a wild finish. Next one I got is happening in March, was the Gordon Ryan versus Wagner Hosha event for Who's Number One. Again, Who's Number One put on a ton of cards this year. I included this card because this had a ton of, this was in March of this year. So literally at the beginning of the year. And this had a ton of information on like who we would continue to see throughout the year. This had one of Mikey Musumeci's, I think, first or second Nogi bout. Where he racked up a ton of points on Marcelo Cohen and then at the end submitted him with a triangle armbar. But it was just Mikey in control the entire time. And it answered a lot of questions about like what Mikey's no-gi game would look like and like how he could, like the level of control that he would have in no-gi. Because at this point in the year, we were still asking a lot of questions about like what his no-gi game looked like and where he was at. And this was the first match that answered like a lot of those questions of like, yeah, he can do it from the top. He can go for the legs. He can do it all. I think, what did he rack up? There were no points in this match, but I think I counted he had like, I think like 50 points or something. Cause I counted if there were points here, even though there weren't. We had Oliver Taza taking a decision win over Johnny Tama. He would then later go on to win his weight division at the European trials. We had Nick Rodriguez taking a decision over Yura Samoz with body lock passing. This was really the first time that we saw Nick Rodriguez playing a really heavy body lock passing game and it being successful versus like the cream of the crop, the best in the world in Yura Samoz, who is also a known body lock passer. We had Rafael Geddes defeating Magu Grindadi via Rear Naked Choke. We'd then go see Geddes win Who's Number One and just have a great year overall. This is also the first card for Grappling Rewind that we were able to cover Cole Abate on, like, the main card of something in his match versus Ned Johnson, who he wins via ankle lock. Again, it was a very interesting card because it showed kind of where these grapplers would go through the year, and it showed a bunch of new developments that we hadn't seen before, so I thought it was worth highlighting in the year. We also saw Gordon Ryan versus Wagner Hosha. Gordon called Triangle on Wagner, I think, right? Or was that a different match? He called it versus Jimenez. He called Armbar.
Yeah, he called Triangle, right?
Wasn't it a Triangle? I don't remember what he called. I think he did call it. But it did have 2 points in the match where Gordon actually legitimately had to defend some stuff that Wagner was throwing, which we hadn't seen from Gordon in a while. I think this is the last legit match that Gordon had of the year before he went out.
Yeah.
I forget if this match happened before the Jimenez match or not. And he came back versus Philip Rowe for like that kind of odd exhibition match. But we haven't seen a whole lot from him this year. This would be the last time that we saw him. So that's why I included this, because it was a really interesting card that showed at the beginning of the year, you know, who was going to have breakout performances. Back in February, the February card was the Gordon versus Jimenez card. That was headlined by Craig Jones and Rollo Jr. But the big thing that happened on this card was the slap. It was the Gordon versus Galvao slap. That was in the beginning of the year, February. We talked about that. If you want to hear us talk about that in much more length, go look at the Grappling Rewind podcast page. We have, I forget what the episode is titled. I think it's just called, it's titled Gordon Slaps Galvao or something like that.
Yeah.
And you can hear all our thoughts on that.
Such a random thing to happen.
Yeah, it really overshadowed the card, but it was a big event. And then later we'd go on to find out this year that Gordon and Galvao were actually going to meet in the super fight at ADCC. That was still when they got into that altercation backstage at this event. That was still sort of unknown. And then later we'd find out that, yep, they were actually going to have a match at ADCC coming up. And Gordon was going to do his division, which was +99 now, and the super fight.
Yeah.
Let's see. Any other matches? We also had Natalia DeJesus being the first woman to ever beat Gabby Garcia, Gi, and No-Gi on this card as well. So that was a big, big moment, kind of like a changing of the guard into the new heavyweight women, kind of being able to game plan for Garcia and able to take matches off of Garcia. This was the first match of the year where we saw that happen in February.
It was also the beginning of Gabby kind of not having the hand almost for matches.
Yeah.
She started slowing down a little bit and not really looking like, not being as dominant in her matches.
Right. She wasn't able to just like put you in a place and keep you in a place. You saw the women of the heavyweight division being able to like,
well, before she would just throw them off the stage.
Yeah.
Like chuck them around.
Yeah. And that was happening much less. And that's again, February this year was the first time we started to see DeJesus, who had mentioned in earlier interviews that like, yeah, I fought her at PANS. I now knew what I had to do to beat her, getting the opportunity to do that and showing up at who's number one. At the time, this was actually a huge upset. And I think throughout the year, it sort of colored it where now this is less of a giant upset. Because I think this is the first time that Garcia had been beaten in Nogi in years at the time.
Years, yeah.
And it would sort of get overshadowed because it wasn't, although it was a dominant victory, it wasn't, DeJesus didn't get really, really close to subbing Garcia at a lot of points in the match, much like the Levy match, where Levy was a very, I mean, DeJesus had wins over Garcia before going into this. Yes. Levy did not have wins over Garcia before. And for Levy to be able to take that, it sort of overshadows DeJesus' win over Garcia as part of like big upsets. It is kind of funny that we have a bunch of mentions of Gabby Garcia being beaten this year, and that kind of speaks to just how dominant her run was at the heavier women's divisions for so long that the year that she sort of like does not do as well, it is such a point of mention. Yeah, it is such a point of mention in the show. Let's see. We also had a great performance. Andrew Wilson took a really close decision on PJ Barch over this card. We had Gio Martinez taking a win over Virginia Casale on this card. Overall, it was another really interesting card for who's number one. They ran a bunch of them this year, and I like a lot of the matchmaking they did. Moving into earlier in February, we had BJJ Stars 5. This, if you're going to watch one like quick tournament again, go back and watch this one. This is the one where Gutenberg Pereira was on a tear and almost took the whole thing, beating Lucas Barbosa in his semifinals match, beating Nicholas Mergali in his quarterfinals match. And this was, for me, one of the biggest upsets of the year. Gutenberg Perretta came out in rare form. I absolutely loved talking about this match when we broke it down on the show, and love talking about this event in general, because Gutenberg Perretta is a guy that we have covered for years and years on the show. I've seen him compete, I think, once or twice live here in Baltimore, when he actually took the heavyweight title, I think from Tim Spriggs, or I forget, there was a match with him and Tim Spriggs here in Baltimore for the heavyweight title at Fight to Win. Yeah, at Fight to Win.
Yeah,
and it was the match where Gutenberg basically sat down flat and left his legs out. And it was this very, very weird match. So to see him a couple years later change his game, make improvements, and then beat Nicholas Mergali, I mean, only by an advantage, but still, like, clearly beat him in the rule set, and then follow that up with a decision win over Lucas Hulk Barbosa, and then barely take a loss to Penna on 2 points, for me was really, really impressive. And I got me, I know you love an underdog, Miranda.
Like, yeah,
that's one of the things that you love more than anyone else on the team, I think. So to watch him just go through this tournament and then have a fun match with Felipe Penna in the finals, there's some great, really interesting technical aspects and folds to it. And personally, this is the one-night tournament that I had the most fun breaking down this year because of just, like, no one expected Gutenberg Perretta to beat Mergali in the opening match. And that just set off this really, really interesting run for Gutenberg Perretta and him to kind of have a really interesting year. And that was back in February. This card also had a bunch of other super fights, but that, for me, was the highlight of the card, was that. And then that's all I have for cards, Maren. Do you have any other cards you want to go through? Or just want to get into other matches?
We can get into the matches. So I think that was all the real, like, heavily stacked cards that we had.
Yeah, some good stuff to go back and watch. I think there's some other ones
that they never... Yeah, there's some other ones, but they never really went anywhere. There's things scheduled, but they never really, you know, amounted to much.
Right. Yeah, some matches that didn't kind of pan out the way we had wanted them to pan out. So let's move into some more matches. We've already talked about, Miranda's done a great job here and actually crossed off all the ones we've already talked about.
I'm trying to cross them out as we go so we know what's going on. But I'm also using two computers, so it's a little complicated at times.
Yeah, I'm also using two computers. This is the most complicated remote setup we've ever run, and hopefully it turns out well. But, you know, with all the remote... Again, it's also been a while since we've done a remote show, so I'm, like, off my game doing the remote shows, and it always throws me off every time we do one. We talked about Gutenberg Perretta versus Mergali. Another big win this year was Murasaki, Andy Murasaki, winning, I think, was it the first EUG or was it the second?
I think it was the first EUG.
This is the one where he subbed Gianni Grippo. And I think this is an interesting match because it was the first match that I think Grippo had been subbed at Black or had been subbed in at least a couple years or, like, in the gi. This was a huge sub win for Murasaki.
EUG won on April 3rd. Of this year.
Yeah. Murasaki had an amazing turn, but his win over Grippo here is what really stands out in this event, because two things. A, it's a big win for the first time Grippo had been subbed in forever, and B, because Grippo would go on to have a phenomenal year after this match in Nogi. This was a gi match, and then in Nogi, Grippo goes on to do amazing at trials. We'll talk about some more trial stuff later with Grippo. And then he goes on to win
the Emerald City Invitational.
The $10,000 Emerald City Invitational. He has that really crazy heel hook versus Ellis that still gets brought up this week on Instagram, and the debate is still very hot about that. But it's interesting to see kind of the transition from getting subbed by Murasaki and Gi and then going and having these amazing performances. He won, I think, was it Nogi Pans or Pans?
It looks like Nogi Worlds.
Nogi Worlds. Mm-hmm. By, like, Kata Gatame and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just a really interesting kind of turning point for Grippo this year, from going to getting subbed to having these amazing performances at all of these other events after this.
Yeah. Yeah, because it looks like he had quite a few losses prior, and then he kind of goes on this, I mean, just hell path.
Yeah.
Until he hits Keith at ADCC, which no one really expected to happen.
No, I mean, he was winning that match, until, like, Keith gets the back and finishes him, which I think is why it made that final, or that final, was a quarterfinal or semifinal?
It was a semifinal.
Yeah.
It was because then Keith went on to go against, what's it called?
Yeah,
Abate. Keith went on
Abate
to go into finals. Yeah.
That was a wild match.
Everybody at Trials enjoyed that match too.
Yeah,
that was probably the most applause I saw the entire.
That was the loudest match of the weekend by far, because this the swing of momentum. There weren't that many matches going on when that had happened. No, I think there were. I think there were three matches going on when that happened.
Yeah.
And it was just wild to be mats. I'm pissed because I was on the complete opposite side of the mats on the corner. So I had to look over to see what was happening. I was like, oh, that's wild, because I knew that he was behind, and then to see him on the back and see him choking, was just a crazy way to have that happen. Another crazy match that happened this year, a huge come from behind match, Kennedy Masayal versus Josh Cisneros. I think this is the first or the second one. This was the one at Fight to Win. That Cisneros, in the last, like, dying seconds of the match, gets Kennedy's back and gets the choke. Overall, it was a barn burner of a match. It was a great match. But that finals, again, having Cisneros again showing off his game. Again, that's the thing that keyed us off to Cisneros initially back in, like, 2017. Was he was a purple belt, and he hit, like, a flying teepee choke at Fight to Win. And then we kind of followed him to purple and into brown. And then to have him return to the Fight to Win stage and then hit another kind of come from behind win versus a guy of the caliber of Kennedy at his first year at black belt was just, you know, super impressive. And it was, again, we love, and I think Zach and myself and Josh, all of us really love watching Cisneros' game, because he's a guy that will consistently, even to his detriment in places where he has the win, continue to fight, continue to attack, and keep going and pushing the action and make for really interesting matches. And this match kind of is where it pays off. He's down, and then he comes from behind, he gets the back, he gets the choke, and it's just an absolutely wild finish, and I'm super happy that we had that happen this year. You still there? You're frozen.
No, I'm still here.
Awesome.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you.
I'm in the woods, so you never know. My internet goes in and out.
You got that satellite internet?
Yeah, so, I do.
I think that the last match we have that are discussions for, not necessarily matches of the year, but just like very, very defined moments of the year, was Cade Rotolo versus Ethan Constant. The first match they had, I'm not sure if it was this year or late last year, was really,
I think it was
really
late last year.
Was really, really contentious. And Cade had taken a really close decision victory over Ethan Constant, and we watched it and went, yeah, I don't know. Seth responded, and other people responded that, yep, this is how it scored, and they gave some reasons, and I still, you know, it was hotly debated in the community and within the Grappling Rewind about, like, yeah, I'm not sure. That was a really, really close match that Cade took. So they put a rematch on. And Cade comes out, different game plan, and just shows how much better he is and the improvements that he's made in that short time between their first match and this second match, and subs Crownston with a Darce. I don't think it was quickly, but it was definitively. He dominated the match to the Darce and then finished the Darce. So I think that again, why we put it under like matches of the year, because there was so much controversy in the first match, and for Cade to kind of stamp that out, sub Cronston, and then go on to have the match that he had throughout the year was just absolutely wild to me.
Yeah. The prior match was on Who's Number One, and it was in June of 2020.
Okay.
So it was like a year.
Yeah.
A little over a year.
And then to come back.
Under a year, I mean.
Yeah, and then to come back and do it and then defeat Constance in such kind of a definitive fashion. There's no question. You know, there's no need after that to see a third match immediately, you know, until Ethan had made some changes to his game in order to kind of be able to deal with Cade more effectively. So, really interesting match. I want to move into... Let's see. What else do we have? You want to go into rules, or you want to go into wow moments?
Probably go to rules. While my brain is still functioning, we should go into rules, because wow moments we can just kind of talk about.
That was neat. All right, so moving on to rules.
You don't need to like go into detail about those.
So these matches are matches that had interesting weirdness that spawned big debates within the Grappling Rewind for.
And there's another one, but we didn't include it on our list, and it was from ADCC, and we'll not get into that one.
Oh yeah, okay. you're talking about Devontae Johnson versus Joe Dirkshire. It was the only match that we saw of the weekend to actually go to a second overtime.
Yeah,
we got into that. It's a big debate anyway. If you should go to overtime. And actually, I actually talked to the ADCC refereeing staff about that, and they basically went, "Look, it was not definitive. The big boss of ADCC wanted it to go to another round. The athletes agreed, and they went to another round." So there was a big discussion for I think a couple weeks on if that should have gone another round.
Yeah, we argued about it.
We argued about it intently, and I very much enjoyed the debate because Miranda and I had just taken the ADCC rules seminar, and I got to like go back and pull through the information and look at it.
Both of us had a little different way of looking at the same situation. Yeah.
And it's cool, but I think again I appreciate matches like that because it makes us discuss internally and it makes us. Look at matches critically and go, okay, why is this scored this way? Why does this happen? I enjoy those discussions because it makes me a better analyst and it makes me a better referee and it makes me better at doing this and it gives me a better understanding of grappling. So it's not a mention. That's definitely a rules thing to include. Victor Hugo versus Muhammad Ali, the Aoki lock.
I like Aoki locks.
Yeah, I think it's legit. If you don't know, this was at the IBJJF Heavyweight GP. Victor Hugo hit essentially what is like...
It's like a crawl... It's a modified
straight
ankle,
hook.
But you like cross your arms, basically.
It's a modified heel hook where you have the arm inside the heel under the armpit and you flex
and
out and you cross and it puts a heel hook motion, but it's technically an outside toe hold, which is the same as a heel hook. But if you look at how the rules are written for IBJJF, it's allowed. So
it's what I do when I get pissed off. Yeah. If I get pissed off with people, it's how I finish my leg.
Yeah, it's an Aoki lock. And so
if I ever hit an Aoki lock on you, it means I'm pissed off, just so you know that.
But it was good. It spawned a bunch of discussion. I mean, Ali was pissed about it because he said it was a heel hook. It's in the gi, so it's a very interesting, within the way that it's written, currently allowed in the IBJJF. And we all kind of talked about it and laughed because, like, yeah, it's definitely a heel hook. But based on how you finish it and how it's written and, like, what you can and can't do in the IBJJF, it's still legal. And
yeah, it's within the rule set.
Yeah, it just makes us laugh when these things get brought up as, like, oh, there's a little loophole. It's not a sub that we see super frequently in the IBJJF. It's not a very common submission.
Yeah.
But it's a valid submission. And again, Victor Hugo took out Muhammad Ali in the finals of a $20,000 tournament.
Yeah, it was a large amount of money, I can tell you that much.
Yeah. Big tournament. So Miranda, do you want to go into Barbosa versus Deniz?
Yeah.
The BJJ Stars 6.
Like choke out situation.
Yeah.
So Barbosa is up in points, and Deniz slaps a choke on him, and Barbosa goes out, but no one really knows when Barbosa went out. We don't know if he went out before the buzzer or after the buzzer, and Barbosa still wins.
I think it was pretty clear. This was a weird one. We discussed this, we debated it, and even on the broadcast, this was like, I think, almost 10 minutes of them discussing and talking and doing.
It really depends on when he goes out.
That's the weird discussion here. And we discussed this on the show, when we did this, but let's rehash it because it's the end of the year.
Yeah.
It's do you stop a match when the timekeeper stops it or when the referee stops it or like somewhere in between?
Yeah.
And that's the question because the timer stops it. And then the referee doesn't stop it until a couple of seconds later. And so when the match is stopped by the referee, he's unconscious. And in the event of an unconscious fighter, the rules can be interpreted different ways. And especially because we do jiu-jitsu, there's no line item in the rules for this. And this happens occasionally in MMA, and we've seen it, I think,
a couple of times in UFC. There's really no way to really tell when they go, unless they limp, unless you limp out. There's no real way to tell. And I mean, if you have 7 seconds left of a round and you're going to win money, why not go out? I mean,
yeah. I don't fault him at all for it. But I just think it's funny that it introduces this weird, it introduces this weird debate that you figure, again, there's very strong arguments on either side of it of like, well, he's asleep and the match stops, but like, was he asleep when it was over, but the referee didn't stop it? So it introduces this level of weirdness, and there are very solid debates and discussions on either side of that that are not either correct or incorrect. And I think for me, that's what makes it the funniest, is that there's no real like right answer to this. It's sort of how you interpret it. I personally think that if the referee stops the match, that is when the match stops. And if you're asleep and the referee stops the match, that should be the determining, that should be how it is. Because like in MMA, that's how it is. But again, it's grappling, and grappling is not necessarily the same in how people interpret it.
Did the referee stop the match, or did the timer buzz?
The timer buzzed. Watch me get this wrong, because this is what I remember.
I remember it being like a whole series of events where it was very difficult to tell if he was out when the time went out.
Because the other thing that's weird is because the on-broadcast time, if you ever watch like combat sports, this is just an overarching thing. There's a reason why most combat sports fade the timer out with 10 seconds left.
Because they're not on time.
No,
because
the time that you're seeing as the audience is not necessarily synced up with the actual like timekeeper time. And so to avoid this weirdness of the audience like arguing, oh, well, how much time was left? It's like they just fade the timer out when there's 10 seconds, so that if it's a second or two off, usually in a 10-second window, you can't quite tell like if the time's off, but the time is correct on the mat, and that's what you go with. So the timer that we're looking at on broadcast is different than what you hear in the event than when you see the referee stop. And there's like a lag between all of these, and you're kind of going, well, he's unconscious at some point in this time, so where's the determination made? On the mat, they determined that he still won the match because he was up on points, even though he was asleep when the match stopped. And I went, hey, that's bullshit. But that was what was determined. So it introduces a weird can of worms, and that's why it's in this weird rules section for the year. Miranda, you have a different take on it?
No, that's about how I take it. I couldn't tell if he was out or not. And I mean, like I said, you have 7 seconds left. I mean, go out.
I also admit I love how he admitted, like in his like post fight Instagram post. He was like, sometimes I win in my dreams. And it was just like, bro, you're gonna just rub salt in the wound there of like of the victory. It just made me, the whole situation just speaks to how new of a sport we're in, and how there's a lot of stuff that was like, well, this hasn't happened at a high level like this before. Yeah. What do you do? Like, there's not a procedure. They had to come up with it on the fly, and they had to make a determination that pissed some people off, made some people happy. So again, more weirdness of 2021, but it made me laugh that Hulk was asleep and still won a match.
Still won, Our next one is going to be Victor Hugo and Marigali.
Oh, this is like 2 weeks ago. Let's bring it up again. If you didn't know, DQ, another DQ at the IBJJF Worlds. Margali flipped off the stands.
The thing that pissed me off about this situation...
Oh, you weren't on the show this week. This was Zach, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, you haven't said your piece on this.
What pissed me off about this was they should have freaking handled it when it happened or shortly thereafter and not given the match to Margali and then came back and did this weird-ass bullshit where they bring everybody together and they try to discuss what the fuck they should do.
Yeah, it's like, it's not a professional way to do it. So if you don't know, Victor Hugo and Nicholas Margali. Nicholas Margali defeats Victor Hugo on points, flips off the crowd at a certain point because someone's talking shit to him. He gets upset. IBJJF gives him
a
penalty.
That are allegedly talking shit on the sidelines, and that's what Margali did an interview and said that people were talking shit. So he gave the finger. He didn't think it would be a problem. He got a penalty during the match for said finger.
Right.
And then afterwards, they come back and they remove him.
Yeah. And when they gave him the match, he won the match. Then after the match was done, the IBJJF retroactively disqualified him and suspended him. So it also removed him from the absolute final that Felipe Pena was in. And so it's just like there's a way to do this. And it was like, it's your biggest major tournament of the year. Why would you do it this way? And also it highlighted a big, thing we've talked about for years, which is huge levels of inconsistency with IBJJF refereeing. Like, per the letter of the rules, you can definitely do this. But why wouldn't you do it on the mat? Why would you do it at that event? It's just
I've also heard stories of I know people that have been suspended by IBJJF before for talking shit to the refs, and they get like a letter. You know, I mean, you lose your match, and then you get the suspension by letter, like, later on. It's not like an immediate where it completely screws you for the rest of the match, or the rest of the day, you know? So that's another weird thing that, I don't know.
You're in combat sports. I think that, yeah. At least me, I tend to lean very hard towards one direction on these things that is less professional. Like, you flip someone off in a combat sport, that's kind of par for the course. Like, yeah, do I love to see it in, like, an event we're trying to make bigger?
It happens all the time.
Yeah, it's like, I don't love to see it, but does it bother me to a level that, like, I think you should suspend someone in a world final? Like, no. We missed out for the fourth year in a row on an absolute final because the IBJJF decided to take a specific avenue with the enforcement of their rules that they have not previously done for things like this at the world stage. It is what it is. It's more IBJJF weirdness. I can't wait till another organization gains prestige in the gi and we can deal with less of the weirdness.
Yes.
Let's move in more rules. A rule that I'm going to forever call the Grippo rule. Anthony Burchak getting choked out by Gianni Grippo at ADCC trials does a front suplex. When Grippo's backpacked on him, technically, you can look at this either way, as a slam or as a spike, because Grippo hits his shoulder and face on it. Now, we've gone and debated this this very hotly at the event, after the event. Mo put out an information about it, and actually, this has now changed. If you have someone backpacked and you're choking them, you can no longer slam forwards. In ADCC, the rule has always been if you're in a sub, you can take them down whatever way you want, much like in MMA. Like, you can spike in MMA if you are in a submission. You can bring them down whatever way you are, whatever way you wish to.
Feel necessary, yeah.
And that it actually overrules the spiking rule where spiking is banned because you're in a submission. You're allowed to bring them down whatever way you wish because they can essentially let go of the sub and prevent that. And it eliminates this weirdness where people put themselves into bad situations in MMA because they can't get slammed out of it or spiked out of it. That rule existed at ADCC. And then after this happened, everyone got together and went, maybe people getting paralyzed at a grappling event isn't a good idea.
It's not a good look.
So again, I was very outspoken. I was like, yeah, it was fine. And then talked to a bunch of people and they went, yeah, you know, the juice isn't worth the squeeze on this one. Maybe having a little more safety for this particular thing is okay.
Well, and they're really weird. If you look at their rule set in general, they're really weird about, like, necks and shoulders and even the way they do their chokes, what chokes are legal and what chokes aren't legal.
Like, you can't do a twisting neck whip guillotine. And you can't do a crucifix with both shoulders trapped. Yeah. Again, Miranda and I attended the ADCC rules seminar. We got certified as ADCC referees, like Class C referees for ADCC. Again, I love rules and I love these sort of debates and discussion because I think it's how you make sports better by understanding your rules, figuring out what works, what doesn't work, what's interesting to watch, what's not, what's safe, what's not safe, and then where you sort of draw your lines in the sand there.
Yeah. I just realized I don't know where my certificate is. It's around here somewhere.
I think I gave it to you, right?
Yeah, you gave it to me.
Yeah, I gave it to you.
It
was in my house, and then I was like, you need to have this so I don't lose it. I'm going to frame it and put it on the new podcast set.
That's what I was going to do, but I don't know what I did with it. I wonder if it's back here. Anyway, we're in my home office right now. It's good times.
So we'll find. We're in my home office, too, but also doubles as the podcast set when needed. Yeah. So, that was interesting. And, again, it's interesting to see those times in grappling and in sport when you have a specific rule that is changed due to one incident. So this was, for me, forever with the Grippo rule. Grippo was the last guy to get slammed forward in a choke legally in ADCC.
And then he just chokes the shit out of the guy.
And he just chokes Anthony Burchak hard. He was like, And he just, you see him just nail the choke down, like, oh, okay, he's upset about this. And then you see him after the match, he was pissed. It was a very wild weekend of grappling, and forever now the Grippo rule comes from it. Let's see. Also had a fun match. We had Nick Ronan versus Giancarlo Bordoni. And one of the one of the, what was it, Emerald City Invitationals, hits a really neat heel hook on Bodoni, and I think it didn't make it into our big upsets of the year, but it definitely, like, we have it listed as literally a maybe. Like, maybe. Yeah. It was a really big Bodoni, I think, going into that tournament was the favorite. He had just come off the trials win, like, a couple weeks before, like, 1 or 2 weeks before that, right?
True.
Something like that. And then Nick Ronan, who hadn't made it to the finals of the trials, but still looked good in trials, wins by this really interesting heel hook where he's able to thread his leg back up and get knee control in a position that we don't typically see folks get it from, and then wins via heel hook. So I think definitely worth a discussion. And if you haven't seen that particular finish, definitely is worth going back and looking at, because, again, you're going to see a lot more from Nick Ronan. You're definitely going to see a lot from Giancarlo Bodoni because, well, he won the trials at 77 kilograms, and so they're 77 or 88.
He was 88.
He was 88 because Fowler was.
Yeah, because he went against 99. He went against one of our friends.
Yep.
First round.
Yes, and I had to corner against Gordon
you
Ryan.
You cornered against Bordoni.
I cornered against Bordoni and Gordon Ryan, and that was that was a hell of an experience to do. Let's see. So let's move on to wow moments. We've talked about a couple of them. The Grippo heel hook at Elevate at EUG. Sorry,
at Emerald City
versus our buddy Ellis Karadag. Basically just grips when Ellis has his foot kind of on the hip of Grippo, and Grippo just lays down and does a really uncontrolled heel hook without the outside knee control.
And what's good to hear is that Ellis did go back to competing a few months later.
Like, I trained with him, I want to say, like, 2 months after, 2.5 months after that, and he was, like, fine. He was, like, perfectly moving around with no issue. I talked to him. He's like, he was fine.
He's pretty bendy. I mean, he's a pretty bendy person, so.
But it is funny, because this came up literally this week on Instagram. People, like, discussing, like, is it good? Is it not good? It's like, man, it's a $10,000 tournament, and nothing about that submission was illegal. Yeah, I'm not happy that my friend got heel hooked super quick and fast, but like, it's legal in the tournament. That's at that level, you know, those are the submissions that can be applied in that way, and that's, you know, that happens. So
if I ever see them rolling, I normally grab them and then giggle. Yeah. I don't actually rip it. Yeah. I just grab it and then look at the person and giggle. Like, and they normally fly.
So, yeah, definitely wow. I think one that we'll continue to see for years and years be very hotly debated in the rules. And I think it's funny because I think I sit on the other side of this. I think most people, especially most hobbyists that don't compete at this level and don't see this level, see it as like this huge unnecessary motion. But it's like if you compete at that level, that's kind of what's happening.
And the other problem is, especially with that heel hook in general, you have to rip it because if you don't have enough control of the leg.
You don't have outside control of the leg. And if you go slow, they have to make a very small adjustment to get out. Like, you have to beat this with speed. And it's kind of like the armbar that Shinya Aoki hits in, it's a snapping armbar. In an early event, might have been a dream event or a pride event. I think it was dream. It might have been pride. I don't remember it. Aoki basically got off the ropes.
There's certain things that you can't do. You can't do slowly.
We do combat sports. We do combat sports, and like at that level for $10,000 on the line, like that is a good portion of these guys' professional salary that they will make through competing in a year if they can even get through the rest of the folks and win that. You know, this is a professional combat sport with submissions that there's no rule about how fast or how slow you have to apply a submission. Perfectly legal. But definitely a big moment. Gonna see it for years to come in Instagram threads and forums about, like, is it too much? Is it not? Yeah. Big moment that happened this year. Also a big moment this year. We had Canuto, Renato Canuto. Was it Lovato? I think it was Lovato. I'm looking at Miranda because I wrote it down as Canuto versus Lovato. Yeah. It was Third Coast Grappling. It was the underdogs event, and I think it was in the semifinals. Right? It was the finals of the underdog event. And Renato Canuto is kind of playing, not possum, but he's like being a little tentative. He's going in, going out, and then he jumps a flying armbar out of nowhere and catches Lovato with it.
Okay. If we're going for Third Coast for the $10,000 Nogi tournament, it's, He hits It's Jake Shields.
Shields.
It's Jake Shields of Flying Armor. Oh my god,
I can't believe I wrote a Levata. I knew, because... okay, I was thinking tall, lanky, white guy, MMA, 171.85.
Jake Shields. Jake Shields looks like dad. Like when I watch him grapple, yeah. I'm like, look, that guy's definitely a dad.
I interviewed him at one of the Third Coast Grapplings a couple years ago. The one that Gordon got suplexed by Bo Nickel. Okay. I did an interview for BJJ Fanatics as part of that with Jake Shields. Okay. Interesting guy to talk to. Shields had a match against Hamla Bahal that night.
Yeah.
And that was I got to interview all those folks. That was really wild tournament.
Yeah. In this tournament, I mean, Jake Shields was looking good. He defeated Pat Downey by just sitting and making him actually try to do jiu-jitsu instead of just wrestle people.
Yeah. We talked about how good Shields is in this. And Shields has like an ADCC medal. Like, Shields is no joke, a very, very good grappler. And we're seeing him more and more kind of come back into grappling and things like, mostly on Third Coast.
Yeah, but, and he also does all the weed tournaments. The high rollers.
The weed tournaments.
I couldn't think what they were called for a second.
Kerkorian won like 10 grand like a couple weeks ago with one of those as well.
No, Kerkorian also won combat jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, but I think the week prior, he won a high rollers, like a $10,000 high rollers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, high rollers, you don't win money. You just burn weed, don't you?
He won a $10,000 check. I saw him with a picture of the check, and it was wild, yeah.
Oh, I thought you just won, like just 5 pounds of weed.
Pounds of weed.
Then you have to, like, figure out what to do with it in, like, the couple days you're in Vegas.
Yeah. DJ Jackson won one of those and talked about, like, the weed he got and, like, what he had to do with the weed. He's like, yeah, they get a bunch. He goes through and talks about the tournament. And it's, again, we don't cover them much because they're not broadcast usually in a way we can watch them. But they do run some interesting events now and again.
I had a friend who did it, and she said she got there, and it was when they were they had to be like a team that was like owned by a distributor, like a weed distributor. And you just show up and they just give you like this like bag of goodies. And that's how you're like welcomed to the event.
Welcome to High Road.
And then just from there you just go.
Yeah.
I think I would be the stupidest person ever if I tried to do one of those tournaments. I would get like flying armbarred in 5 seconds and die.
Yeah, they're unique tournaments to say the least. Canuto versus Jake Shields, not Levata. I was like big MMA 171.85 tall. I was like, nope, that's Levata was not in that tournament. Again, we've seen Levata come back as well this year. I don't think we're talking about any of his matches on the show, but it has been cool to see Levata. We saw him win the UFC Invitational last week. I think it's the last time we covered him, so look for him to do more. He's actually gotten announced for ADCC, so we will at least see him at ADCC. Other wow moment we had this year is Mikey Musumeci hitting a modified knee bar heel hook that he dubbed the Mikey Lock. Half the community went, cool, you get to name it. Other half of the community pulled up every Boss Rutan and Old School Catch Wrestling and Ken Shamrock video ever.
Wasn't Junie the one? Junie had footage of him
hitting it earlier in the year. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very funny. It got very debated in the community.
Junie was like, I'm going to show you 50 times when I've hit this in different ways, and then he just started posting the videos of it.
Yeah,
and then
Junie's hit this for a while, and he has a really interesting entry to it. But it definitely was a moment that people that haven't been around grappling for a while, it was a very new leg lock to them, and it was interesting to see it hit versus a guy like Richard Alarcon at a stage like the Who's Number One event. You know, it was definitely a big tournament in a super fight to hit something like this. And then Mikey was very proud of himself for having essentially come up with this himself.
Yeah.
But it highlights one of the funny things that happens in jiu-jitsu is that, and again, obviously no one's immune to it. Mikey's a multiple-time world champion.
We also forgot to speak about the Mikey and 10th Planet guy little situation.
Oh, Mikey and Gio?
Yeah, when
Mikey got very upset at Gio for being like not friendly to him and then walking it back later. Yeah, that was a whole saga. If you want to see Mikey, the most riled up I've ever seen Mikey.
Yeah, I've never seen him that.
Go back and watch his post fight interview after he fights and beats Gio Martinez at Who's Number One.
He shouldn't
have a black belt. He doesn't have a spec. Yeah. It was a wild interview. And then Mikey later walks it back when he's a little more calm. But and overall, what's funny is, interesting.
After all of that, he goes into Pettigo, which Pettigo isn't the most, you know, I mean, they're a little more
rough around the edges.
Yeah, rough around the edges.
Let's call it rough around the edges for those.
I'm a fan of them, so yeah, I like the show. I watch them.
Look, they're guys that put up good matches. They have a good attitude. They train really hard. You know, we saw breakout performances from Couch this year.
They only included both of us for like 2 seconds in their ADCC coverage.
Hey,
that we were in the background a lot.
We were there.
2 seconds.
Had a great breakout year this year. Not breakout year this year, but Mikey Musumeci, again, the winningest American in the gi. He takes a fourth straight world title in the IBJJF, beating Bruno Mafassine once again in the Rooster Weight division. Wild to see, you know, controlled the match. It is crazy to see Mikey continue to be both at the highest levels in the no-gi and also competing in the gi and winning at the world title level. You know, very few guys do that as consistently as Mikey.
Normally you see them, drop one or the other. Yeah. One gets a little slower than, you know.
Yeah. So but, I mean, a lot of guys can okay. still get, a lot of guys are in the mix there, but Mikey's the guy that's consistently, again, who's number one, he gets upset, but it's also he was probably 15 or 20 pounds the smaller guy in the smallest division. Again, he makes Rooster Weight, which is 127 in the gi, and then the who's number one was at 155. So that kind of speaks, he's probably giving up close to 20 pounds.
I don't think he cuts a lot, because I think he goes, he talks about the fact he eats pasta all the way up to like day up.
Well, he cut. For the previous Rooster Weight title, he had to cut a lot, and he got to shave his head off. Like that was very, very close. But he seemed more comfortable this year.
Shaving your head isn't going to give you that much weight.
It's not,
because I've debated trying to do that before. I've debated cutting all my hair off to make weight once.
Yeah,
didn't happen. But you know, anyway.
So that does it for all the matches that we had listed. As always, every year on the Grappling Round, we're missing some. We forget it every year, and the show comes out, and somebody will DM us, and I always appreciate the DMs. Be like, hey, Maine, you forgot this tournament or this match or this amazing event. I always appreciate that because it lets me, in kind of the lull we have, go back and watch those and experience those again. I love doing this, and so when I get messages like that, it's always fun to hear like the things that I did forget about because, again, we cover... On the average year, we probably cover 100, easily 100 plus events. You know, there's weeks that maybe even stuff that we don't get a chance to talk about on the show, but we'll watch. We cover just at least we watch 1,000 matches. I think would be very, very conservative in a year. And so this is just some of the highlights that we remember.
Yeah, then you add in ADCC this year, in which we watched, 600 matches or something crazy like that.
I think it was, 513.
Okay.
Something like that. And I watched most of them.
Crazy amount of matches in 2 days.
Yeah. So, great year. BJ Heroes has also put out the top 10. They do this every year, every other year, and I really appreciate how they do it. They basically go, they give each big tournament a point value, and then they... give everyone that competed at the black belt level that year points based upon that. Like ADCC is worth 6 points. No-Gi Worlds is worth 6 points. No-Gi Pans is 4. US Trials for ADCC is 6 points. European Trials is 3 points. No-Gi South Americans are 3 points. And then you get up to 1 point for a bronze at those. And they list out all of the divisions and the top placing people. It's really cool. And I like that BJJ Heroes comes up with their own independent ranking system to kind of aggregate a lot of these together. I don't want to read through all of them. I think it's just a really interesting thing that they do, and I appreciate that they do it. They don't do it exactly like this every year, but I appreciate the BJJ Heroes serves as an independent sort of aggregator for all of this information and all of these things.
Yeah. Messed up one. The second one is wrong.
Okay. Elizabeth Clay, for the no-gi rankings, Elizabeth Clay is the top for the women. Kendall Riesling is second. Rafaela Geddes is third place. Maria Maliasek is fourth. And it goes on. Again, it's all, everything, everyone through the divisions is always someone that you would expect. Like heavyweight, Victor Hugo is first. Kynan Duarte is second. It moves on like that. I want to just highlight, if you're curious what it looks like, go look at it because these are all names of people you should be familiar with because... they're the best in the world. They have it for gi, and they have it for no gi. They also, I think later in the year, they will do like a or later, like, next week, they'll do, like, an average of, like, everything, I think, of, like, all the points throughout the year. And I don't know if they're going to do that this year or if they're going to break it out into individual weight classes like they did. But
oh, I'm using the wrong... You know, I'm trying to do this, and I'm totally using the wrong computer setup.
Using the wrong mouse?
I was using the wrong keyboard. And I was like, why is this not working? And
yeah, I have two keyboards in front of me. One for the computer behind the camera, and then one for the camera, the computer that's running all of, like, the recordings.
Well, I was going to look to see if anybody showed up on both the no-gi list and the gi list. And Pato did. But for no-gi, they kind of combined... They combined, like, Rooster and Light Feather, and they combined different divisions, where in gi, they kind of went by the regular the regular listings.
I mean, Duarte's on both, too. Duarte for the ultra-heavyweight division is second place in the gi, or sorry, no-gi, and then first in heavyweight at the gi.
Yeah.
You know, we have a couple guys that will that bounce like that, but a lot of guys, I think, did select what they wanted to do this year.
Yeah.
So overall, it's interesting. Do you have any sort of closing thoughts for the year? This is, again, your first year on the Grappling Rewind. When did you come on?
Yeah. I came on... When did I come on?
It all blurs. This is, like, year four or five for me, so it all blurs together.
It was sometime during the summer. It was... So you talked to me about it during a belt promotion. But it wasn't... I'm trying to think who was promoted at that time. So it had to have been, like, maybe springtime.
Maybe. It all blurs together eventually.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's been awesome to have you. We still got previews this week, but I didn't know if you had any kind of closing thoughts on the year or anything that you think we missed or anything else you wanted to add.
Not right now.
Even though you helped
me
make
the
list.
Maybe when I'm not, like, sickness brain, my brain will be a little bit better and I'll have better things to say.
There's that. We have two events... coming up here, we have just got announced, I think today, I actually did get announced today, was Craig Jones versus Pedro Mourinho for the 205-pound title on January 21st. I thought this was January 14th from one of the things I saw, but they may have actually moved it since then to the 21st.
It said the 21st when I looked at it, because I added it to our spreadsheet of things to do. So it is the 21st.
Yeah, it's listed on all the graphics now. It's the 21st. So that should be fun. I don't think these guys have faced each other before. We will talk about this and preview this more as we get closer to it. But this coming week, in a couple of days actually, on the 30th of December, we have Fury Grappling 3. They have a lot of MMA fighters on this card, and I'm not hating it. We have a main event.
It's kind of fun.
Again, Danielle Kelly versus Rose Namajunas.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
At 128. That's an interesting weight right there.
Well, Rose is a straw weight, so she'll cut to 115. So she probably walks closer to, like, 125, 130, 135.
How do you go 128? No one else. Everybody else is at fives and zeros except for that match.
Probably they decided to make a catch weight there at that. Again, your main event, you kind of get some
Danielle
leeway.
Kelly's little. I mean, she's like 115.
If that. Is she 115 even?
I think she's... the bracket she's been in, it's 115.
I think she is usually on the smaller end of the 115 bracket. Potentially, she could even be like an atom weight that's going up. I don't remember. I know Kelly's going to make her MMA debut here soon. And I think that she is a plus 250 favorite. And there was some discussion on Reddit on WMMA about this particular matchup. Again, Rose is the champion in the UFC. Has had some really great grappling performances. It'll be curious to see how she does against Kelly. Kelly's been hot and cold, has looked very good on Fury. I'm just curious. I honestly don't know how this is going to match up. I would give this to Kelly because, again, she is the pure grappler, but Rose has some serious grappling chops as well. We just haven't seen her in a submission-only, like, professional grappling event before. This is the first time, at least that I recall, us ever seeing her. So it always always lends it to a lot of questions.
I don't recall seeing her at a, like, an IBJJF or anything like that either.
No.
Like or trials or anything like that.
Yeah, she does have some great flying armbar wins in MMA, and, again, great subs. So I'm assuming that we're going to see her throw that versus Danielle Kelly, but Kelly's going to come in ready for that. I'm going to give the edge here to Kelly just because I'm familiar with her game. Although, again, I have so many X factors with Rose. I'm going to lean into Callie here because I'm familiar. Like, she grapples professionally. This is what she does. But we have seen Rose in MMA put on some great, great matches. And we have seen fighters before that can do both and frequently do both. So this could have a new avenue for Rose. We have Sean Bradley versus Craig Jones on the main event.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, on the co-main event.
Yeah.
Looking for Craig Jones probably entering the legs there.
That I would think so. I was looking back to see. He has a decision win against Michael Chiesa, which is, I mean, he's a decent grappler, but I didn't watch the match, so I can't tell you if there's any grappling going on. But I'm looking back to see if I, because I don't recognize his name at all. But
I recognize his name, and I can't place where I've seen it from. Again, I'm looking at the CFFC TV tickets list, which has all the lineups. I don't have like a Tapology ranking that has me. I can click to the other matches.
Yeah, that's what I have.
You have Tapology?
Yeah. So I can go back and forth.
We also have Joe Selesky. Oh, you want to peep on that match?
Nope. We can move on.
I mean, that one, again, look for Craig Jones to do what Craig Jones does. We saw him last week versus Cowboy Cerrone on UFC Invitational.
But they had an agreement, too, that Craig wouldn't go after Cerrone's legs.
Oh, did they?
There was an agreement that he wouldn't purely go after Cerrone's legs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that it would be a more interesting match.
Okay, because that was combat jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, which I completely and totally, you know, I mean, it's great because it made it more interesting than, you know, just Craig Jones going into Cerrone's legs and taking him out.
You know, Barambolo and the heel hook. You're like, cool, that was what you were going to do. Like,
there was an agreement made that he wouldn't, like, just immediately go after him, or that he wasn't going to be purely leg locking him.
So at least like that's what I heard. For this match, I assume there is no such agreement in place. It's straight up grappling. I assume Craig Jones is going to enter into the heel hooks and then win there. Again, him also getting another rear naked choke victory wouldn't surprise me. Next match, we have Joe Selesky versus Donald Cerrone. Again, cool to see Cowboy coming out not 2 weeks in a row, but essentially like every other week and doing submission grappling. Cowboy is a really good grappler. He is getting matched up against really tough guys. Selesky's a tough guy. We haven't covered Selesky on the show before, so this actually could be a really interesting match. We saw Cowboy on a SUG a couple months ago, maybe earlier this year or last year, versus Rafael Dos Anjos, and that was actually a really fun match, and Cowboy took that. They actually did it twice because there was some weirdness in the match. And they decided to let it go.
They had to come back, yeah. I remember that now.
And I do like watching Donald Cerrone grapple. So it will be cool to see if potentially as he takes less frequent MMA fights, if we see him kind of move into the grappling circuit, because very, very good competitive black belt. So it'll be fun to see if he makes that transition.
You know what I just remembered? I didn't remember it. I just looked down at my screen and I completely forgot about it. Rizin does a New Year's Eve event.
Rizin.
That is like such, so much fun to watch.
It's $25 this year. I'm going to buy it. I'm trying to convince my brother to stay an extra day in Maryland so that we can watch it together.
Dude, I'm going to buy it.
All right.
$25?
Yeah,
dude,
it's awesome.
Awesome.
It's up on my phone.
You're going to have the cup of noodles that's walking around. You're going to have like the whole like them coming in with bongos and shit. It's a great event.
I love it. It's 3 a.m. It's like some weird, absurd time you have to watch it, but it is a lot of fun.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah, but you got to watch it live. So,
but it's actually really cheap to attend because I've looked into how much to go to it, and it's only like $120, $150 for the whole weekend.
So I'm trying to convince Rachel to make that our honeymoon because our honeymoon's going to be in Japan, and I'm trying to maybe finagle it to be the New Year's Eve Ryzen event, because that would be like a dream come true. And if I can bundle, you know, my lovely wife and a honeymoon in with an event I've always wanted to go to for the past at least 15 years with pride, like, I want to go see it. So also on this card, and I think completely non sequitur here, we have Clay Guida taking on Billy Quarantino. We have Chase Hooper taking on Hanato Moicano. That'll actually be really fun. We have Nicky Rod taking on Steve Mowry. We have Kevin Holland taking on Cody Hamron. Neo Magny taking on Hakeem Silva. Alex Caceres taking on Eddie Torres. Phil Haas taking on Andre Petroski. This is basically like everyone in the UFC that's off for the week, they're bringing them here.
Yeah.
So I'm actually super excited. This should be a really, really fun card. Yeah, this should be an absolute banger. I think tickets are a little more on the expensive side, but for all of that talent, like, that's pretty phenomenal.
You know, my only problem also with the place that they do Fury at is they're going to pack that place so tight that you're not going to be able to move, and it's going to be a million degrees.
Yeah, the 2300 arena gets a little warm.
Yeah, and you can't see anything.
Yeah.
Because it's an elevated stage, but they don't have elevated seats.
Yeah, it's a flat staging at 2300. Again, I've watched a bunch of events there, and they're always a lot of fun. I've got some really good memories of interviewing fighters at 2300.
Yeah.
Watching fights there. I've watched TFFC there before.
I've always had two heavyweights at one of the first fight to win matches that was there. I just had two of the ultra heavyweights fall on top of me. I had to hide under the stage because they were coming towards me.
That sometimes. So that's this next week. Should be a lot of fun to cover that card and then get to previewing other upcoming events. But this has been the year in recap. This is always one of the more difficult shows that we do a year because we have to remember, like, hey, you've watched over 1,000 matches this year. Give me the highlights, main. And I go, I don't remember what year that was. And every year there's always a match. There's always three matches that we miss, and there's always one match that we talked about as a match that happened this year that was actually last year. And I don't know what match it is this year, but I guarantee you that if you do it, if you DM me what match it was, I'll send you something for Grappling Rewind.
Okay.
So, Miranda, what are your plans for the week?
Right now I'm in my house. It's gonna be good times.
Yep.
Staying home, working.
Nice.
Fun.
So I'm going to hang out with my family.
Hopefully I get to train sooner than later.
Hopefully. Well, best of luck. I'm going to just hang out with my family, enjoy my time off. I've taken the whole week off to just be off with my family. So it should be a lot of fun.
That's fun.
Mm-hmm. So I got nothing else, Miranda. Anything else?
Nope, not at all.
All right. As always, in the show, I'm your host, Mange, and the co-host,
Miranda.
And we are the Grappling Around. See you on the mat, whatever it is. Stay safe. If you like the show, please consider sharing it on Facebook with the folks at your gym. It's the best way that we grow the show, and we really appreciate it. You can reach out to us on email.
We also have Instagram. We have Facebook. We have Twitter. We have Google+.
Until that shuts down.
We have a website.
If you have an event you would like to have us cover, please let us know. If you have a name, like most people do, and you'd like to have us stop butchering it,
let us know.
Reach out to us. The show is also available on YouTube, Spotify, in addition to iTunes and every other podcast service. We very much appreciate your time, and thank you.